This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Kraft mac and cheese is better than 90s hip-hop. We'll remind you of your childhood without making you feel incredibly old. Kraft mac and cheese, best thing ever.
Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Empire, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
This is episode 130, Emperor's Table Series, Nate Rosenfeld. On this episode of Huntivore, Nick is joined by fellow Michigander and new host of the Michigan Wild podcast, Nate Rosenfeld. Nate is a family man who lives and breathes the outdoors. Nate has conditioned his life around seasons so that he can maximize the right time. The guys talk about several topics and eventually settle in on meat versus antlers, where they are able to find and totally agree on some very foundational terms. Nick, of course, dives into whether Nate processes his game or takes it in, and is quite impressed with how Nate handles his shoulders. So let's dive into this great chat about hunting in Michigan on this episode of Huntivore. Well, hey, folks. Beautiful
evening here in Michigan. I tell you, it's still getting warm during the day, but we're feeling the chill at night. I think fall is in the air. We still have plenty of time for summer, so let's not panic. I mean, it's not even close to Labor Day yet. But at the same time, man, things feel like they are rolling. So the time that you hear this is going to be, hopefully it'll be somewhere between the end part of August and the beginning part of September. So a lot of things are being discussed. A lot of things are being finished up, fine-tuned. If you're not shooting your bow, well, this is your PSA to get out there and start doing that immediately. But it's just a great, exciting time. A lot of things in the air, a lot of plates being spun. And so we just kind of have to take our licks with it, just hold true, and follow through and execute. So that's kind of what this part of the year always seems like to me. As an educator, man, like school is now just starting. By the time you hear this, we'll be, full swing at school. I'm going to be surrounded by a bunch of kids, and I'm also going to be sweating about trying to find time, carve out time to get out here this October. But that is neither here nor there. We are joined tonight by a fellow Michigander coming to us from the north side of Grand Rapids. If you're not sure where that's at, just go ahead and take a look at your right hand facing towards you. Find the palm side just underneath your pinky and right there in the big squishy part. That's about where Grand Rapids is at. We're joined with Nate Rosenfeld. He is the host of the Michigan Wild podcast here on Sportsman's Empire. Nate, thank you so much for joining us this wonderful evening. Tell me, have you been out shooting your bow, getting ready for these upcoming seasons?
Oh, absolutely. I've been shooting my bow pretty much every day. I try to do it in the morning before work and every night before I go to bed.
Excellent. I like that morning and evening. Start your day outright and then, coming home after work, you're tired, you're trying to decompress, but I can't think of a better way to set up that pressure shot than just getting out of the truck, just getting out of the car and heading over to the bag target. Sounds like you're kind of going with the first arrow, best arrow mentality rather than the send a million reps down range. Is that kind of where you're leaning?
Exactly. Yeah, so I really like the last light shots at night before bed. Gives you really realistic, shooting opportunity because, you don't necessarily see your pins the greatest or low lights when usually deer get to come out. But, yeah, I like to have my first arrow be money. I have three separate targets set out, and I shoot three arrows, close range, medium range, long range, shoot once at each, get my arrows when I come home from work, and do it again at night. So.
Awesome. Yeah, I just I've been normally really good with shooting my bow, and this we just got back. We've been gone for 2 weeks, so I actually had to blow the dust off the bow because I haven't been using it. We've been gone, and so getting back and again finding form, making sure to execute my points, and then from there seeing where the arrow goes. That's kind of been my. My mentality is I'm actually getting to the point where I'm like, okay, did that feel like a good shot as opposed to worrying about the result of the shot? Because as far as the result of the shot goes, as long as I'm going through my process, that arrow is going to fly true out of that bow. And so then it just becomes, a little tick here, a little tick there, a movement of the rest, adjust the sight just a smidge, like you're just kind of fine-tuning at that point. But I'm really trying to hone in on, getting a good draw, getting a good hold, and making sure that I find those contact points. That's kind of been my mantra, at least this past year, and it's been paying off pretty well, at least through the 3D range at that point. Like, I can always fix a little bit of the flight of the arrow from the bow, but I normally can't always depend on me. So that's where I've been really trying to focus on is perfecting my setup.
Yeah, I really like to shoot, you know, in the wintertime, my basement, short yardage, you know, 13 yards, I think is all I can get my basement. But that's when I really bulk shoot, get the form down, focus on my anchor and muscle memory. So then when the weather gets good, you can jump right into, you know, extended ranges. And then that's a real good extension of you from muscle memory and stuff. So, and then you know if you're off or on, by the arrow flight.
Yeah. Well, we jumped right in here into archery. But just in my small experience, getting a chance to talk with you, Nate, you bring to the plate here, you bring to the Empire a whole unique setup as the far as you're very much a generalist. But you do a lot here in Michigan. And I'm just kind of going through one of your previous interviews. You're also a dog guy. You've got several hounds that you chase small game, chase waterfowl. Tell us a little bit about your passion about using dogs to help you out in your hunting pursuits.
Yeah, I have really dove into using dogs for the probably last like 10 years. Once I was in high school, I had really close friends that had beagles and just loved that. And once I had my son Henry, he's 7 now, and he got to the age like 3 years old approximately, I was like, I need to take him outside more, do things, and just beagles were easy to do that, chase some rabbits. And then, yeah, the last 4 or 5 years, I've kind of dove headfirst into beagles, rabbit hunting and doing that. And I love seeing the dogs work. And just another thing, to get out in the woods and enjoy that with my family and do that. I love being outside. If I can be outside 24/7, I'm happy.
Awesome. So you're a family guy as well. How many kids you got?
Just one.
Just the one. You haven't decided to get into the multiples yet. I'm sitting over here with 3, and I can tell you, it's I don't sleep better, Nate. Actually, I take that back. Don't do it.
I
because...
am the oldest of 6, so I know.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we just, my wife decided to take on all the soccer practices, or she's coach for each of the 3 boys, at least soccer-wise, and then I am assistant coaching their football team, their flag football team, so I got 2 kids in multiple sports. I tell you what, it's an absolute juggle fest right now. We just got home. Shoot, we've been gone from the house for 12, 14 hours, and you know, we're kind of figuring out, like, is this really what our fall is going to be like? Oh man, this is going to be a little bit tough. So you just got the little one. That's, you know what? That's good enough for this year. Let's just stick there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I have the easy job in that, you know, that regard. But I think another kid is in the future possibly, but there's a lot of things. We both work full-time jobs and careers and stuff like that, but just trying to be free-spirited with it, and I guess when it happens, it happens.
There you go.
I love kids, and I love being outside with the family and all that stuff, so.
So I want to get into a couple things, too, and just kind of firing some stuff at you. Being a Michigander, I'm going to kind of rip a few fast ones at you, and you just got to tell me your answer right off the get-go. Is it go green or go blue?
Go blue, baby.
Oh, man, this is going to be a short interview, I guess. Lions or Packers?
Oh, Lions for sure.
Oh, good. You saved it right there. Oh, shoot, I lost.
We're going to the Super Bowl this year, by the way.
Are we? See, I feel like you're putting the cart ahead of the horse. I think we're going to scare a lot of people.
The Kool-Aid has been drained.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad you drink the Honolulu Blue. I'm looking for at least an NFC North championship before we start talking further. Now, I will take anything that we can get. I mean, I feel like we can stand up there with just about anybody. In fact, I think we get Kansas City right out the gate, game one. That'll be a real tester right there. But at the same time, I'm holding. I don't want to say I'm reserving my excitement, but I've been hurt before, and I want an NFC North title first. I mean, yes, we have to get there, but once we get that, then it's like, okay, good. Let's see if we can get icing on the cake. But I like how you're calling out the Super Bowl here on our first year of some of some good stuff going on. So, next question here.
But it's going to happen.
Processor or self-processor? When you get your venison, are you cutting it up or are you taking it in?
Everything I shoot, I cut up myself. I think I've had two deer my entire life that I brought to a processor, and both times, one was the weather got really warm, I was super busy at work, and then the other time I just had shot a handful of deer and didn't have time, and I donated the meat to some family friends.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we will get into that here very soon. Where was I going? Burger or full steak? What do you prefer?
For venison?
Yes.
Or all cuts?
Just for venison. Do you like the you like to burgerize it, or do you like the full steak cuts?
Can I throw a curveball and say jerky?
Ooh. So you're a meat treats guy. You like the meat treats, the jerky, the sticks.
Yeah.
This is good. This is good stuff.
Yes.
Because we come from a lot of different places, and it's amazing how every family eats uniquely. Because then that's going to lead up to my next question here.
Grew up.
Go ahead.
We grew up with having lots of access to chickens, pork, and beef. So venison kind of always became a treat for us in the family. We always use that to supplement stuff like jerky and sausage and all that kind of thing. So that's always been kind of my jam with that.
Nice. So then it goes into who is mostly preparing your meals at home? Is it you on the wild game side? Is it you or is it your wife?
I do that. My wife typically does all the sides, and I'll stick to the meat and the grill master.
There you go. You stay in the domain of the proteins. I like that move. That's kind of where I tend. We would be full carnivore if I was in charge of, just like you said, if I was in charge of the entire meal, it's always like, oh, shoot, I haven't done anything as far as like a potato or a green or a starch or nothing. And so, yeah, it would just be a lot of meat if I kept on going with it on myself.
And some Kraft mac and cheese.
There you go, a little mac and cheese on the side. All right. So, hey, we're going to – oh, no, I got the last one, the creme de la creme. We're going to throw the gauntlet here. Are you a meat hunter? Are you is it brown or is it down, or are you picky? Are you you're the guy going for the pinnacle? Do you want the big antlers? Are you an antler guy or are you a meat guy?
I'm an antler guy. If you had to break it down to that basic,
that's what I wanted.
I really like to shoot deer though, and shooting does and that kind of thing are my jam also, but a buck's going to be impressive for me to shoot it.
Gotcha. If you haven't heard Nate's interview with Marcus, head over to the Michigan Wild when he kicks it off. That was a great episode, a good back and forth with you guys, because I think you did unpack a lot about how you got to the point of wanting to chase the bigger deer in the woods. You want to go for that top 10% buck that's out there. You're waiting, you're holding out. And on the flip side, I am one that when it comes to deer, if it comes within range, rather than trying to convince myself to shoot it, I'm convincing myself not to shoot it. Or excuse me, instead of convincing myself not to shoot it, I'm convincing myself to shoot it in many instances. Timing, I want to get as much meat in the freezer as possible. We can debate this back and forth a bunch as far as holding off for animals. But that's usually been my approach, is freezer is first. Antlers are a great decorator, but at the same time, like, I my blood gets pumping anytime a deer comes by me, and it takes a lot for me to be like, that doesn't fit my category for me to take. And coming from your background, you've been hunting your entire life, essentially, just by your interview, started really young, and you've been hunting for whitetails for most of your life. Go ahead and talk a little bit on how your progression of, like, becoming a young hunter and then going through the steps, going through the years of being selective and going up to these bigger deer that you're chasing.
Yeah, I grew up in a family full of deer hunters, and killing deer was something that wasn't a foreign object thing to me. That was something that was a daily, yearly thing. You're surrounded by family members that love to be outside hunting deer camp, you know, doing the traditional gun hunts, shooting deer with bow. My dad and uncle, you know, when they shot a deer with a bow, it was a talk of the town back in the, you know, the late 80s, early 80s. So for me, I just took to it like it was second nature. I loved it. Loved being outside. Loved the challenge of shooting a bow. I loved the whole aspect of going out there trying to figure out deer. The illusion of a, you know, a buck to come out and shoot a buck. And I've always been kind of competitive growing up. So, you know, I was like, when I was younger, it was like, how many does can I shoot tonight with my bow? You know, those kind of things. And always wanted to shoot the biggest buck I could find. After I shot a few, you know, year and a half old deer. And then I don't know what really happened. I know my uncle and dad, they started shooting four bys on a property up north. And I was kind of like younger when they started that, before I could hunt. So I would sit and watch my dad and uncle pass deer. So it was almost by the time I started hunting, letting a buck walk was no big deal. And then I had free reign to shoot whatever I wanted. And after I did that, I think I shot maybe three bucks on this one property. They're probably a year and a half old. And I was kind of like, you know what? I'm ready to do something a little different. And then I became 16, and primarily it's hard to get up north and hunt as much. So I really found spots to hunt down by where we live down here, and realized the deer are a lot bigger, and because they weren't getting hunted as much. And then got my first trail camera, and that just changed the game for me.
Because now you knew what was out there.
Could be, you know, all those things. Yep, exactly. So it was pretty easy for me to kind of climb that ladder doing that. And I really enjoyed it. Just got a kick out of shooting the biggest buck I could. And I didn't need to shoot the deer for meat because, like I said earlier, my family had access to pork, chicken, beef. And our freezer was always full of that stuff. So it wasn't like a necessity to shoot a deer to have, you know, nice meat. So it just became easy to do what I did. And I just got a really fulfillment doing it that way.
Gotcha. No, that's a great experience. You know, you just having your tutelage underneath your grandfather and your dad and your uncles, like, and being able to witness that and go through that. And as I've been going through my own journey with that, I was a self-taught hunter. Being a part of a poultry farm, like, yeah, we have turkey at our access, but then choosing to, like, you know what, I want to acquire my own red meat, and I want to be able to go out and get my own stuff. I don't want to rely on, you know, a butcher to tail that for me. You know, I can always go to a rancher and to get that, but I don't know, venison has just, you know, pound for pound, dollar for dollar, been something that my family, like, just very much enjoys. And so getting that opportunity to get a critter up nice and close and to be able to take that shot and to put that animal down right there, it's kind of eluded me as far as to worry about, you know, the headgear. Like, I started out with archery mainly because when November starts, Thanksgiving is in full swing, and we're needed at the turkey farm during that time. So my season actually shuts down right there when things are getting hot. and for me to take something with a bow, you know, any deer, I don't care if it's doe, buck, button, you know, little yearling doe, any deer taken with a bow nowadays is, you know, that's a trophy in itself. That's an accomplishment. It's a game of how close can that critter get, not how far away. And being chasing after that venison, I'm always looking at how I can make the quickest and most ethical shot possible. Twofold, two sides of a coin. One side, I don't want that animal to suffer. But then two, with the less that that animal suffers, the quality remains in the venison. And because I can see it drop in front of me, or I know that it didn't trail off too far, that's where I'm going to be able to glean the most harvested meat off of that, is with the quality of that. So, yeah, that's kind of where my heart is at. And, you know, hearing from your side that this is a game that you've been playing your entire life, that you are chasing after these big bucks. And in the account of you chasing after these big deer, I'm sure hunters like myself, being meat hunters, you actually take the pressure that we apply to the deer probably into your equation. Am I right?
Yes. You know, and I don't look down at anyone that's in a certain part of their journey for archery hunting or whitetail hunting or gun hunting, anything like that. I mean, I know that I've been blessed to have good private property access as a little kid. So seeing deer and watching deer be deer was something I was blessed to be able to do. I mean, it's not huge properties, but I had spots. And then as I got older, you know, I was not afraid to knock on doors. I mean, take to that very easily. That goes for all aspects of outdoors. I mean, with my small game hunting, with waterfowl hunting, all that. So I was very determined at a young age to get property to hunt. So that was like kind of my sweat equity I put into it. I didn't really have the ability to do food plots or habitat plans and stuff like that. I just got lots of permission. And then I set my life up. You know, I've been self-employed my entire life, working with my dad, and then, you know, have my own company now. Allows me some freedoms to do certain things. You know, I can work a lot of hours, and if I got to jet out on a Thursday or Tuesday and want to go and hit the woods, I can do that. I never have to miss opening day of gun hunting, you know. So my life is set up in a way where I can spend, you know, good quality time outside. So I get good opportunities, not because I hunt every day, but I can pick those good days, and I've always had the opportunity to learn and do that. I'm not stuck at a desk job or somewhere at the beat, you know, 40 hours a week, 5 days a week. You know, it's been a sacrifice because, you know, I work those 100-hour weeks sometimes, but I've just kind of revolved my life around a point where I want to be good at this, and I want to be good at this, and what can I learn, and how can I get better every year? And that's something that I love to do. It takes care of that competitive drive I have. I mean, I golf right now. I just started golfing a handful of years ago, and I stink at it, but it's lit a fire in me to get better every year, you know? And that's just how I kind of whitetail hunt. Like, there's big deer getting shot in Michigan. Why can't I be the one of those guys that shoot the big deer?
Absolutely. We have listeners.
And like you said, though, too, with how you find the enjoyment of the art of archery hunting or deer hunting, you know, finding where they are, the process, you are able to harvest the animal with an ethical shot. There's really no other feeling in a sport that you can have with that. And then you can take that, put in a lot of effort in learning how to take care of that deer after you shoot it, provide for your family. There's like something very wholesome about that. And I don't want to take opportunity away from anyone because they might not have the opportunity to shoot a big antler buck. So they have one opportunity a year, and that ends up being a year and a half old buck, and they shoot it. That's like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's, they worked their butt off and they got that enjoyment. They probably enjoyed that just as much shooting that buck as I did shooting a 4.5 year old, you know, buck that I've 2 or 3 years of experience with.
We do have listeners that are out of state that may want to come to Michigan, Nate. So let's just reiterate, there are no big bucks in Michigan. Okay, let's just put that bottom line there.
Yeah, they're all, if there are any big bucks, they're nocturnal.
Yeah. But the way you put a bow on that last part there, where you're just talking about that, if a guy's got an opportunity to take something and to use that to nourish his family. That just warms my heart, because that's exactly that. Both, you know, I've been in that situation, and I just know that there are others in that situation that are just getting started out. And by all means, it's your tag, use it, and take the animal. My thing is if you're going to take the animal, get the full utilization out of it. Really take the care, whether that is if you're going to a processor, doing the best that you can on your field dress, not getting sloppy on that. Or if you are going to process that animal yourself, to make sure that you're gleaning each of those sections, that when you go through that carcass, that you are taking off every little bit of flesh and meat that you can. Guy I look up to, and he was on one of an earlier episodes, Jeremiah Doty. He talks about his mentality of just another meatball, that when you go back through the bones and you clean up that carcass, you know, some people may be like, oh, I mean, are you going to get a lot out of that? And the way Jeremiah is like, well, it's just another meatball, but that's another meatball that I can put into someone's face that can really enjoy the gift that we've been able to provide here. So, like, that just goes hand in hand as far as, you know, once you get that animal, whether it's got a big rack or whether it's not, that animal deserves the utmost respect of getting full utilization out of that and not just letting it lay and go to waste. Circumstances are themselves.
That was a great conversation.
Yeah. Circumstances do arise where if you do make a bad shot, like, that is, like, you're going to spend the 2 days trying to get it. But at the same time, like, you're going to be out there doing your darndest to retrieve that animal as quick as possible. So, that, yeah, that's, you know, the stuff does happen. But at that same point, like, you know, if you take it, that's great. But, like, but what I really would just hope is that full utilization was being taken from it.
Yeah, that conversation you had with him was, I listened to that recently, you know, just kind of going through some of your podcasts and listening to it, just getting a feel for, I know I've listened to a few in the past, but it had been a little bit, and man, I heard, that was like one of the first ones I listened to, and it was convicting. You know, I've shot quite a few deer in my life, and I've processed a lot. You know, every time a deer gets shot in the family, I gut it, in it, do those things, you know, help. My family has always processed deer. I mean, my dad lived off venison. My grandpa, you know, starting a dairy farm back in the day, they lived off venison and did that stuff. So processing deer has been a big part of my life. And I heard that conversation, and I was like, you know, I could probably do better. And I think that's pretty powerful, this hearing that. And I'm going to definitely be having that in the back of my head. Hopefully when I shoot a deer this fall and can do that. And it's like, okay, what can I do a little better here? So, yeah, great conversation.
When in the field, accuracy and precision count. That's why we switch our slug guns to rifled barrels, tune our arrows, and use a fish finder on the water. But why should our drive for control end there? The Tapicu line of meat probes gives an instantaneous look at the temperatures of our prized meals, both internal and in the cooking chamber. Tapicu uses sturdy hardware made and assembled here in the U.S., along with their user-friendly, sophisticated software that connects to your smart device. Whether it's a traditional corded probe or the new cordless air probes that give you a wealth of freedom where wires would just get in the way. Adding a Tapicu meat probe can significantly help in getting to that medium rare on venison or waterfowl, ensuring your upland bird stays moist, or even charting your long cooks on a smoker. Visit tapicu.com or find the link in the show notes and use the code HUNT10, all uppercase, at checkout to save 10%. Adding a probe to your kit can make you one tap away from your cue. Dry-aged steaks used to be a steakhouse-only indulgence. An old-world charcuterie was pricey due to being imported or created at a small batch-specific scale. Thanks to UmiDry, their synthetic dry-aging bags and casings allow you to create these meat-crafting treats in your own kitchen. Working in tandem with your fridge, the UmiDry bag material allows moisture and air to pass through, making it possible to dry age large cuts of steaks or roasts. Paired with their curing and seasoning kits, along with safe and easy to follow instructions, salamis and dry sausage are well within your grasp. Use the link in the show notes and sign up for the newsletter to receive 10% off your order. UmiDry, helping us elevate our wild game from the home kitchen. Yes, yes. And you said that, I mean, if you wanted to get fired up to do your own processing, if you wanted to get fired up about what new cut, new little bit you were going to glean from it, that's the episode to start off with, because, yeah, you will be energized to continue on and trying to get the most out of that animal. But, yes, since we're talking about getting most out of our animal, you mentioned earlier on here that you're a meat treats guy, that you're into the sticks, you're into the jerky. Talk to me a little bit on your as you go through your processing, what would be some of the cuts that you hold whole, and what would be some of the cuts that you're like, okay, this is one that I'm specifically using for jerky, and this is one that's specifically going to sausage. Like, walk through me your process of taking apart a deer.
Yeah, so when I shoot it, let's say I shoot a doe with my bow or early season, my first thing I do is I take care of the meat. I will save the back straps, the tenderloin. Those I keep whole, they'll go in a freezer bag, and those can create whatever I want with that later on. And then if it's the right size doe, I will keep the whole front shoulder intact, bone on and all that, and I'll, Ziploc that or, vacuum seal that, and then I will cook that later. And then pretty much the whole hind quarter and all the other stuff, the big chunks of meat a lot of people like to make steak out of, I actually use that for my jerky, and I like to dehydrate it or smoke it. So, and that's because I have a freezer full of steaks ready from beef and all that stuff. So I use really good cuts of meat for my jerky, and I use really good cuts to mix in my burger, because we do eat a lot of burger meat too. And that burger meat can be used for summer sausage later if I want to mix the pork, or if I want to drop it off at a local place and make some snacks for me, that kind of a thing. So some people look at me like, I can't believe you're making that into jerky, but I'm like, I eat this quicker than I'll eat the steak, and I really like it. And it's kind of a victorious thing for me, and my family loves it. All the guys at work like it when you bring jerky in and all that kind of thing. And yeah, it's nothing better than to have some jerky with your lunch every day.
I'm with you. That top round, it's a great staking piece, but at the same time, you talk about making like huge pieces of jerky where I cut with the grain as opposed to cross the grain. I like to really work on my jerky. If I'm going to take a, if I'm going to take a bite of jerky, I want to work on it for the next 5 minutes before I have to take another bite. But
free calories that way.
Exactly. Exactly. All my buddies chew tobacco, and I'm not a chewer. So this is like essentially my my chew that I'm making. I just tuck it in the cheek, let it, swell up a little bit of the spit there, and then finally like work on it as it's finally gone. But using that top round, using those big cuts, those roast cuts, work out awesome when it comes to making big pieces of jerky like that, because they do. Once you dehydrate those, yeah, they get thin in profile, but they still hold their length to them. And you get, three pieces of that, and that's almost a lunch at that point. I mean, you got a lot of meat that you're going to be able to work through when it comes to that. Do you ever use the jerky gun? Or do a chew like that where you use your burger and then make it into the, squeeze it out in the jerky gun? Or do you just do the whole muscle jerky?
I typically just do the whole muscle jerky when I make the jerky. But my dad, when I was younger, we used that way. I think we used like the High Mountain seasoning kit, and we did it in the oven and did that. And once I learned dehydrating and smoker, it was just like, this is the best thing ever. And then that burger, like I said, we eat a lot of burgers, so it's easy for me to eat that up and not to make that into jerky. If I got desperate, I probably would do it again, but so far I've been pretty good on that.
if you had to pick a favorite cut, what would it be?
I would say it probably have to be just a typical back strap, because you're so versatile, you can do different things with it. But a close second recently has been like the whole front shoulder.
Yeah. Talk to me about your whole,
like, pulled.
Yeah. Lay out for me how you're messing with that. When you said that you would keep your front shoulder whole, and then you would then cook it after that, I was like, I think he's onto something as far as doing like a barbacoa or a shredded at this point. Talk to me about your process for that.
Yeah, so the shredded, you know, form. So two of the reasons, I guess there's a couple of reasons, but when you're processing the deer, it is, you know, there's time that's in, you know, invested in doing that. So I just kind of got to the point where I was like, okay, how can I be more effective in doing this? So I've kind of, instead of trying to do it all one time, I, you know, learned to, you know, core the deer out, age it in the fridge, you know, when I had time after work, you know, process it, break it down a little more. But then I got to the idea where I was like, man, I really want, the shoulders always just took so long to, you know, pick through everything and make burger out of. And I had, years ago, we were helping a family friend out, you know, do some work on their house, and they did a front shoulder in the oven, and I remember it was just so good. So I have a smoker, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna try that. And, you know, got a smoker, take the front shoulder, smoke it for a couple hours, got to use a beer in the bottom, crack open a beer, dump it in your pan, you know, either a Busch Latte or Coors Light or something like that, just a cheap beer. And I'd only smoke it for probably 2 hours, and then I pull it out of that and I put it in a pan, like a Gordon Foods pan or something, with whatever kind of concoction of seasonings and all that stuff you want to do. And then I'll, you know, have the lid on it, but not all the way, and still let some smoke get in there. But then that really helps break down the front shoulder, so it doesn't get too, like, chewy.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of mess with that and kind of figure out the critique. And, man, by the time you're done, it falls. You pull the bone out of it, and you just make great shredded venison, and it is delicious.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is a home run. I do two kinds. I do the Hank Shaw barbacoa that's got it's aimed for making like tacos and burritos. There's a lot of chipotle that's in there, cumin, garlic powder, chili powder. It's got some good kick to it. And that's been an absolute favorite as far as when I started hunting, and like that recipe has just held true, doing that. But then even taking one without all the seasonings, with all the spice, and just kind of dulling it down a little bit for the boys. We've been able to make we'll still make the tacos out of there, but like taquitos or freezer burritos. And man, I tell you what, I like making like a shoulder that people do look at it, or at least they you know used to look at this and be like, well, it's destined for the grinder. But you can just glean every little bit of flesh off that thing. And it's not dry, it's not tough, it's so velvety smooth, and it just falls apart in your mouth. Like, it's a great cut as long as you treat it correctly. And sounds like, by the way, you're smoking it, adding a little bit of that smoke flavor, getting that tender, throw it in a pan with some beer, and then, yeah, being able to just almost even probably, you don't even need the forks for it, you just shred it with your hands, and it just comes apart. That's a great way to use that piece of meat.
Yeah, I try to take the kind of less is more approach when I cook, because first of all, I'm not the greatest cook, and I'm really picky, so it works for me.
That was the other question I was going to ask you too, like as far as like, you know, there's the fancier side, or at least the challenging side of cooking, and then there's also the I cook because I need to eat, like that's the blanket statement. And but at the same time, like that doesn't have to mean that you're going to have bad food, or that you know, can't do it correctly. And so just, you know, you explaining that too, like, you know what? It's not rocket science, guys. We can slow roast this. We can smoke this on a low and slow temperature, and we can get a great product and glean every little bit off that. As you've been going through with the different cuts, and I know we've been talking specifically about the shoulder, has there been a cut that's been a real challenge for you, that every time that you do pull that package out of the freezer, you kind of have to take a heavy sigh and you're like, hey, this is going to be a tester on what we're going to do with this piece? Do you have one of those that kind of keeps you pushing that to the back of the freezer?
I struggle with anything roast-like for venison for some reason. And I don't know if that's just because I'm so used to beef roasts and I don't prep them right. I pretty much don't even do roasts anymore for venison. The closest to a roast would be the front shoulder, and I really enjoy that. But I think Yeah, like a neck roast, I think I tried that one time, was not a fan. And yeah, I kind of just keep it simple. Jerky, burger, and then back straps, and then the front shoulders and whole.
Yeah, roasts are difficult. You got a different texture there with the size of the muscle grain, and you got, you know, essentially no fat on this thing. What you got to add the fat to it. You got to make sure that you're not drying it out at that point. It is difficult, and it's going to be one of those things you have to babysit it. I feel like every time that you are cooking venison that you got to babysit it. Even if you've got the probe thermometer in there, even if you got the fancy Traeger that sends you the Wi-Fi, oh, it's, you know, it's not quite yet to this temperature. No, you got to babysit whatever you've got going low and slow. And I can see roasts being that that way. Can I come clean too, Nate? I do have to own up to a mistake that I made while camping. Used my Dutch oven. Yes. I was using my Dutch oven, and I've got this it's maybe a five quart Dutch oven. And it's got the feet on the bottom as far as little prongs, so it sits up nice and high. So if you did want to use it on a charcoal table, you could. I was going to use it in the fire pit at the state park, but we were going to go on a day trip. We were going to leave camp. We were then going to come back, and then hopefully it was going to be done by that point. So we were like had a half a day hike we were going to do with all the kids, and we were there with another couple. So I prepped this front roast that we were going to use. It was actually a mid-roast of a shoulder. And hit it with, I did real basic, but I ended up julienning some onions, slicing up some onions, throwing those in the bottom of the Dutch oven. Full can of beer. I took a full can, once I emptied it, filled that can with water, and then put that in there. So I had half water, half beer. Seared all the sides of the roast, salt, pepper, garlic, and then I put that sucker in the Dutch oven, and this was all there right after breakfast. And so we had a coal bed, and I mistakenly threw fresh lump charcoal all over this fire to, like, all right, get that started, kind of knocked it down, and set, rather than put the tripod out there so that it was hanging above the fire, I took three logs. And then I stuck the feet on top of the logs, like there. That's going to keep it up off the charcoal. It's going to burn those logs eventually, but we'll be back by then in order to get this roast that's now in the Dutch oven. Well, our half a day ended up turning into a full day hike. We ended up hiking Pictured Rocks. Well, then we found another little jaunt to go off of, so we went to there. And so we came back, our six-hour venture ended up being like a good 10, 11 hours. And I come back, and the charcoal's all consumed. The logs are all consumed. And the Dutch oven is, it hasn't tipped, but it's sitting down, and it's sunk like 3 inches into the amount of ash from all of the used-up fuel that was there. So I pulled up the Dutch oven, and at first it smelled really good, like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I took the lid off that. I turned that roast into legitimate charcoal. Because it sat there on that intense heat, it must have fallen in amongst those logs onto the charcoal. So all the seasoning of the Dutch oven, as far as like the oil that we put into that, was gone. It is a bare metal Dutch oven right now. Like, that sucker got extremely hot, but that lid held all of the gases on the inside, so you could see where at one point the bubbling liquid from the roast and from the beer and the water was, like, now it's just ash. You could see where the bubbles had popped and then were frozen in time there. And literally the meat and the bone were, like, fossilized. It weighed nothing, and I actually was able to take the bone and, like, crush it with my hands. So even though, like you were saying, like, you know what, I cook basic and I just want to make sure that I make something good for the family, that they're going to enjoy it. Well, if you go too fancy and you start to want to play with your Dutch oven or you play with your cast iron over an open fire, like, don't go on a 10-hour hike, because otherwise you will completely ruin dinner. Knowing that it was going to be one of those, like, this is an iffy setup, I pulled out a couple pounds of ground that we had in the camper, and I put those in the refrigerator thaw throughout the day. So we ended up having tacos that night instead of my shredded roast. But anyway, I just wanted to say, like, you've been struggling with roasts. Hey, that happens to even the people who claim to be wild game cooks. Like, eventually you're going to screw up. So anyway, thank you for letting me get that off my chest.
If you have a really good, you have a really good fall, it could be because of your burnt offering.
Yes. That, the Lord enjoyed all of that nutrient that was evaporated into nothing. That is a very good twist on that. I think that's
tenfold.
Yes, I sacrificed that to the Lord, as in to bring me another deer so that I can then use another shoulder. Thank you for helping me find a positive spin on that. I felt like I was like, I either talk about this or I don't talk about this, and I wanted to get that off my chest.
Well, you'll be better for it, for sure. I feel better now. So, you know, I feel better, you feel better, we're good to go.
Good to go. So now we're going to play a little game. This is kind of the crescendo of our show, Nate, and this is going to be where we are having the Sportsman's Empire potluck. You are going to be bringing a dish to pass to the Emperor's table. And I'm making up this scenario that at some point we're going to get together as podcasters on the Empire, and we're going to have this elaborate meal. And this meal is consisting of dishes that we've all prepared of our wild game, our favorites, stuff that we're familiar with, things that maybe we've had growing up that bring so much tradition and richness to our life. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn the table to you. And what I'm going to have you do is describe a dish that you would bring to this potluck. Why is it important? Why are you choosing it? But then at the same time, I want you to walk us through on how you or someone would help you prepare that.
Yeah, so as we, hopefully I touched on a little bit, I'm not the greatest cook in the world, picky, so I like basics. Just for the sake of maybe not talking about it again, the venison shoulder would be kind of high on the list, just for a lot of food, a lot of people can eat it, they can doctor it up however they want, sides and, you know, sandwich or whatever. But if I didn't use that, I would not want to follow anyone else. So I would do probably like chicken wings. Smoke some chicken wings, season them, you know, with a couple of different blackening things. You know, try to find the jumbo ones, the big ones, because we're all dudes that like to eat meat.
Heck yeah.
But I would smoke them, and then I would finish them on my Blackstone. Just get them nice and crispy on the outside, and then I'd have a plethora of different sauces for people. So the pregame would be my chicken wings. And then I could, you dip in whatever sauce you like, do that, just because I don't want to follow anyone or be compared to any other main dish. I know my strengths, my weaknesses, so I'm sticking to that.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'm going to add a twist then. I'll help you. But let's take your chicken wing idea, but let's also add in your love of small game. What if we did squirrel wings, or like the hindquarter legs of squirrels? Yeah. I tell you, I enjoy a good, you know, you simmer them for, maybe 20 minutes in a Pilsner, in a cheap beer, and then take those either over to the paint, you know, to the cast iron, or even in a little deep or a shallow fry, add a little flour to them, drop those things in, and man, yeah, whatever sauce you add to those squirrel legs, that is just going to be a, that's going to be a great appetizer. Are you guys, you mentioned earlier, small game was a big passion of yours as well. Are you guys eating your squirrels, or is it merely like you're just going after the squirrels, tagging them, running the dogs? It's more of a social thing at that point.
So if we typically go out small game hunt with dogs, we target rabbits. We have lots of squirrels in the area. So obviously if we see a rabbit and we see a squirrel while rabbit hunting, we will shoot the squirrel. And then my buddy Tyler, who I did a podcast with about rabbit hunting and small game hunting, he loves squirrels. So he usually takes them because we don't really shoot that many of them.
Gotcha.
But he loves them, and kind of to the point where like maybe we should target these a little more. And then, but your idea with a squirrel, would that work with a rabbit hind leg? Because they're kind of, you know, you could keep them on the bone, you could snip them with the shears and maybe do that same kind of thing. I should probably try that.
Yeah. Maybe a little longer in the poach, as far as like simmering them in a beer or in a broth or whatever you want to do that, just because they are meatier. Yeah, you could definitely do that. Same style as far as a squirrel, as far as it's a lean meat, it's a mild meat. You know, you don't want to overdo them, but a quick little simmer in a beer, a little dredge, a little shallow fry. I can't think of anything better to have it at some banquet.
Yeah. Okay. You just up my game. I won't feel so bad now when I show up.
I love it. Well, Nate, I want to turn it over to you a little bit. Where can my listeners tune in to you? I mean, obviously Sportsman's Empire, but where can we find you on social media? Where else can we find and interact with you and your podcast?
Yeah, so I took over the podcast for Marcus, and I think you've had him on before. But the page is on Instagram, Michigan Wild Pod. And, yeah, I'm trying to post some stuff on there. I'm not a huge social media guy. But now, since I've taken over the podcast, I've kind of like, okay, I try to do something once a week maybe. Kind of, I take lots of pictures and lots of videos and stuff like that, but just kind of share them with friends and stuff. So I'm like, oh, maybe we'll just kind of push them onto the podcast page. But yeah, if anyone wants to reach out to me, your probably best bet's either to just go on there and send me a message, and I'd love to have conversations with anyone. But yeah, I think I'm on I think episode 6 is launching that I've done, and I love it, and it's been a lot of fun, and getting a lot of fulfillment out of it and doing that. But never really thought this would be something I'd be doing right now in my life, but something I always wanted to do, kind of. My wife kind of was always pushing me. She pushed me into this, and you can kind of hear that story a little bit on the Passing Torch podcast I did with Marcus. But yeah, I think if you're someone that wants to, you know, listen to a lot of things in Michigan, all sorts of hunting, fishing, some high level hunting, I guess, trying to get in some intricate details with how I'm finding maybe some of these higher end bucks, or some of the other people in the state or people I know that are similar, I just want to give people the opportunity to say it is a realistic goal that you could have. It's not unattainable. There's different ways to go about it. So just really want to use the podcast as that platform to teach people and maybe just have a good time. And just, yeah, if you want to get into fishing, like, I don't fish hardly at all, and I've done some great podcasts with a couple of guys that are big into fishing. So I learned things, and just, yeah, like, I think you've talked about how guys like us like to listen to stuff, be immersed into it, and it doesn't always have to be whitetails. So I kind of got to remind myself of that, because I'm getting really one-minded on that. But, you know, small game hunting is fulfilling. You know, you can do turkeys and stuff like that. And I'm a big proponent about getting kids out there and doing that, because I was able to do it at a young age, and it stuck for me. It won't necessarily stick for every young kid, but they might come back to it when they're in their adult life. But, yeah, I think Michigan's a great state for that, to have a family, being immersed in the outdoors, great weather most of the time, other than the 90 humid days, which those are gross. But
well, don't worry, we're going to get real cold here real fast.
I'm ready for it. I'm built for cold weather. But yeah, just reach out. Any questions, or anyone wants to hop on there and talk about some things in Michigan? And anyone wants to discuss, you know, the big buck versus little buck stuff, I'm down. I'm down for a good, healthy conversation. So, and if you're on the fence too, don't be afraid to commit to something. Because I went 5 years without shooting a buck. and I let a lot of really big bucks walk in that time, and I had a lot of struggle. But that five-year investment has made the last 5 years great and totally worth it in my mind. Some awesome hunts, awesome encounters. Yeah, I ate my tags last year for the first time in probably 6 or 7 years, but that was because I was trying to, you know, do a little different goal. And I think as long as you're challenging yourself and doing that, fair game. Go have fun. Do it.
Amen. Amen. Yes. I'll hold on to a buck tag for who knows, but I can darn well tell you the next doe I see is going to get dropped. Wow. That's where I'm at.
Zapper.
Well, Nate, this has been such a fun hour. I mean, it just like flew right on by. It's a great chance to talk with you. Go ahead and hold on. I'm going to let my listeners on out. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this little talk. If you're from Michigan, I think you're going to kind of feel for the tone of where we're coming from. It's going to feel a little bit like home. And if you're not from Michigan, just continue to remember that there are no big bucks in this state. You might as well not even come. Wink, wink. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But folks, I hope you enjoyed this discussion. I hope you enjoyed getting a chance to know Nate. And another contributor to the Sportsman's Empire. So folks, we are getting to the nitty gritty time where it's time to where we should be shooting those bows. We should be making sure that our broadheads are tuned, and we should make sure the edges of all of our knives, and including those broadheads, are very sharp.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.